If you're a wine region affected by travel restrictions and uncertainty around in-person events, then Interpreting Wine's 100-Day Wine Brand Evolution Playbook was made for you. This complete program leads and supports you step by step to implement multiple powerful marketing channels in your business. It's also guaranteed to deliver over 500 hours of wine trade engagement in 100 days or your money back. Learn more at interpretingwine.com/brochure. I'm Lawrence Francis, host of Interpreting Wine, the place to learn from thought leaders in the world of wine and marketing, welcoming you to the 2022 Wine Communication Series. Across these six episodes, I'll be exploring modern wine communication and marketing in the company of some of the world's leading wine podcasters, traveling virtually from Australia and New Zealand to North America via China. With the influence of podcasting and social audio forecast to grow yet again in 2022, get ahead of the curve with this special series to be released every fortnight between January and March 2022. If you haven't already subscribed wherever you're listening, then sign up today so you don't miss an episode. We continue the series today in the company of Drew Thomas Hendricks of the Legends Behind the Craft podcast. We hear his origin story into the wine trade, and he brings us up to date with examples of how he works with clients. He gives recommendations for those wine brands who are engaging with trade shows. We take a deep dive into podcast micro content, the support that Drew employed when starting the podcast. We discuss my own appearance on the Legends Behind the Craft podcast, other audio platforms, and we look ahead for barrels ahead, including a new podcast alert. Enjoy.
Drew Hendricks here. I'm the host of the Legends Behind the Craft podcast, and I've been in the wine industry since basically right when I graduated from college, 21. I was 21 when I started as a stock boy in a wine store. And before that, I had the goal of becoming a professor of philosophy. So I majored in Attic Greek and philosophy of mind, and then with the goal of going to graduate school. But at the time, I decided to take a few years off, and I was in San Francisco. And when you kind of graduate with a degree in philosophy and Greek, you kind of are left with a few options. So I decided to drink wine. And I figured out that I had a pretty good palate. So I started as a stock boy at a local liquor store. And they had a wine bar in the corner. And I got to taste all the wines and really just was amazed at all the different flavors, all the different nuances. And coming straight out of college, I was a book nerd. And then all wine was really appreciation was there wasn't too much wine on the internet back then in 93. Mm-hmm. So I just started poring over all the books that I could read on it and all the regions. And it just got more and more fascinating. So from there, I became a wine buyer for the store and went through there for about 10 years when I'd write the monthly newsletter and then purchase the wines and then sell the wines, rinse and repeat month after month. And it was fantastic. Some of the big inspirations back at the time was Kermit Lynch. He had his book, Adventures on the Wine Route, and we became one of the bigger sellers of his wines in the city of San Francisco. And he had that, if you haven't read that book, it's one of the best books you can ever read about just the adventures of finding the wine, finding the producers, and then sourcing out just natural, authentic producers. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of the inspiration for the way I wrote the newsletter, figuring I only had a degree in philosophy and Attic Greek, which actually serves you well for selling wine, because philosophy is all about like constructing a convincing argument, getting all the facts down, and then relating it to person so that you can kind of rhetoric and argue the point. And selling wine, there's always a key to the I always see the wine sales as almost like a puzzle where mm-hmm. there's the person that has, they're looking at 4,000 bottles on the shelf, and you know, one of those bottles is going to be the perfect bottle for them. And by asking the right questions, you can kind of guide them to the right bottle, but they're not going to immediately see that that's the right choice for them. You've got to figure out what aspects of those, what that wine is going to appeal to what they're actually looking for. Mm-hmm. And I see the parallel was perfect between philosophy and wine sales. So I had that background, but what I didn't have was a business background. So I went back and got a degree in business and entrepreneurial finance at San Diego State, and then started a digital agency to help other independent wine stores be able to kind of promote themselves. Because at the time, and it's still the case right now, at the time in California, there was a ton of consolidation. You had a Total Wine, you had Beverages and More, you had some of these big conglomerates just coming in and discounting their prices and really taking the market share away from these independent wine stores. And A lot of those wine stores, they started with just so much passion. The owners had so much passion to sell wine, but they didn't really have the skills to actually market their store beyond just their local neighborhood or fight for the allocations that they needed to sell the wines that would really draw in that top wine consumer. So we worked with independent wine stores for a good number of years just to help them boost their sales. And then that agency kind of turned into a more generalist agency, because mm-hmm. you'd get one referral to the other. And then suddenly we're helping businesses across the board, from law firms to therapy practices to golf courses, promote their story. And then that agency niched down into what we have right now, which is Barrels Ahead. And we saw a unique need in the wine industry, and that there's not a whole lot of help or support to suppliers connecting them with wineries and telling the supplier story. A lot of the, on the supply side of the wine industry, you get, it's very nuts and bolts. It's very, a matter of fact, we've got this product that can help your winery. But what is missing is the story behind it. It's the owner's passion or the inventor's passion behind setting up that supply story. So we're bringing the story back to the supply side of the wine. We're actually putting the story into the supply side of the wine industry, since it's been missing for as long as I know.
It's just been missing forever. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah, it's really such a unique, for me and unique for my listeners, story to kind of hear. And I know that when we spoke on your podcast, that I shared some of my own ideas around storytelling and maybe some of the philosophies, I guess, and the structures that I recommend and that I've seen be very successful, really, for guests on my podcast. And I'm curious then, you know, through effectively what sounds like those three iterations, really, of mm-hmm. the agency, has the way in which you encourage your clients to tell their story, how and if so, how has that changed over that time?
You know, it's really changed, and it changed unexpectedly. So at the beginning, it was really about boosting the company up, making it just appear bigger, dominant, the choice. But by making it bigger, dominant, and the choice, the business starts to look less and less personal. And you see this with tech companies a lot. They grow, and then they try to bring personality back into their business to show that they're still human. And that's the thing that caught on to me when I was looking at a lot of the SaaS companies and a lot of the tech companies. The same thing was going on in the supply side of the industry, where it was all product focused. It was all feature focused, and humanity just was removed from it. But what you have at the end of the day is a bunch of passionate people in the organization. You have a leadership team that's deeply passionate about the product that they have, and it's instilling that origin story back into there, so it resonates with the winery, who may have common common backgrounds and common causes that they're looking for. And by connecting people on that emotional level, you tend to make the business more human, and the connection's a little stronger.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And is it possible to talk about some examples, maybe, to
absolutely
kind of bring that to life?
We just launched a new website for Rutherford Rentals. Mm-hmm. And when we when the site just before coming to us, the site was it's an equipment rental company based mm-hmm. in Rutherford, just right in Napa Valley. And they rent tanks, they rent filtration equipment, pressure washers, everything wineries need, especially wineries that are on the large level that mm-hmm. may want to do a micro production for their club members. They might not have those small tanks, or a custom crush facility needs more tanks to support some of their smaller business. So yeah. at the start of the project, they really just had a price list. And they figured really all that mattered was the fact that people could see what tanks could be rented and wineries could rent the tanks. But there was a huge human factor that that they didn't really realize until we started talking, and that people want to deal with people that are happy. They're friendly to deal with. So we ended up building a site all around the human nature of that rental business. It turns out Brad Warner is a wine consultant, also owns a winery, who, when they say that they only rent equipment that they would use themselves, it's true. It's not, they're not just shuffling equipment. They're renting specific equipment. And as being winemakers, they know that they're able to give advice as to what filtration equipment should be used, how it should be used, which comes with that whole level of service that people never really realized. So by building a site full of happy, smiling people, rather than a site just packed with pictures of all the equipment that they use, you see that bigger kind of value add that Rutherford Rental has. But the secret, what we did was we ended up going through like a story workshop, and we interviewed them for an hour. Uh-huh. It was a little longer than that. It was Brad and Lisa. And on the About Us page, we pulled out the best quotes and the best questions. So you can read pretty much about the history. You can read their passion. You can read the motivation right through their own words and right what they've actually said, which goes far beyond just your general About Us paragraph.
I love it. And what I love even more is that we're obviously like totally in tune, because I was actually going to ask you to almost take a step back from what I would call the intervention, really, mm-hmm. and kind of, yeah, give us a sense of that flow. I mean, you've just spoken about the interview, but yeah, I mean, even if it's relevant and possible, you know, a little bit about how you got to sort of meet one another, you know, how did you figure out that it would be, you know, mutually beneficial to work together?
And that was actually done through the podcast.
Really?
So, yeah. So the podcast, we were doing some LinkedIn outreach, because I have a podcast called Legends Behind the Craft, mm-hmm. where I introduce kind of the leaders in the supply side of the wine industry. It's yeah. It's the unsung heroes. And I actually don't want to say heroes. They're the helpers to make the wineries heroes. So it's it's that faithful guide, Alfred, and trying to just figure out the stories that haven't been told. Like, most people know the story of Robert Mondavi, but few people know the story of Brad Warner, who is the consultant for Mondavi and Krug. Mm-hmm. So it's highlighting that. So we met actually in the outreach on there, and I started talking about how we're trying to change the supply side of the wine industry to make it more human. And the conversation evolved on that. And it was sort of an aha moment when I was explaining that, bringing humanity back into the supply side, that they started to see that their site, there was a disconnect between the way they actually did their daily operations and the way that their site was portraying them. So LinkedIn was how we found it.
And I think it's great to share even a little bit of the kind of tactical element. Was it literally kind of following up with people who had sort of liked posts and were following, or was it mm-hmm. something that was sort of more, I guess, ad based, or sort of getting your message out there to your target customer?
Never really ran an ad, but really just tried to add value. The thing is that you really want to do is you want to add value. And I just was asking a question. I was going on leaders in the people that I would want to have on the podcast, but more importantly, people that I knew that were very connected in the industry. And I just had a simple message saying, hey, this is what we're trying to do. Do you know anybody that would be a good fit? And then they would suggest a name, and I'd reach out to them saying, so-and-so thought you'd be a great guest for our podcast. Yeah. That's the lead generation secret.
Amazing. Amazing. And then I think, yeah, to kind of maybe overlay and kind of get our timelines straightened up. I mean, would it be a case of the agency and the podcast kind of came along at this very similar time, or that there was actually a little bit of an offset?
No, there was definitely an offset. I'd been wanting to do a podcast, and I launched the podcast in March of this year. Okay. So we just finished wrapping up, I think episode 40, and it's been a fantastic like 8 months doing this. But we Barrels Ahead came into existence about 2 years ago, and it's really was just, you know, focused on ramping up the business. Mm-hmm. And then we realized that, you know, there's a story, and the podcast can be just this excellent vehicle for helping people tell their story. Cause a lot of the people on the supply side have never been interviewed. I can't tell you how many times most of them are like, this was our first podcast. Whereas on the wine side, sometimes those winemakers, they've got their shtick down, and they've done a dozen podcasts. So it's a very different situation having someone on for the first time.
That I think makes sense, really, you know, in terms of the the evolution and I guess, mm-hmm. Trying to bring new people into the fold of the agency and put yourself out there.
And that's the one thing when I started, I mean, to be quite honest, I saw the podcast as just a way to enhance and promote the business and a way to kind of add color to it. But having done it for the last, 40 episodes, mm-hmm. I now see it as core to the story that we're trying to promote in a platform that is really irreplaceable. The stories that I've uncovered and the tales that I have and just the connections I'm able to make between different suppliers, you get to go so much deeper on the podcast. So now I see it as kind of the core of the agency.
Something that I've come across and imagine that you would as well is that, you know, there are so many there are so many avenues into wine, and I think there are so many people who are spectacularly passionate about wine. But what's really curious to me and interesting to me is that you've in terms of your agency Barrels Ahead, you've gone for what on the face of it, you know, feels like a fairly niche market, and you're talking about the podcast working hand in hand and, you know, starting to uncover some of those. And I'm curious even take, I guess, another step back in a sense of, you know, you understanding before you started Barrels Ahead, really the size of the opportunity, you know, how easy was it for you to kind of realize, okay, I've got an inkling or I've got a passion for this supply side of the industry. But, you know, how are we able to figure out how much that was really worth? And, you know, of course, having sufficient numbers of clients and sufficient number of services to make a viable business?
Well, that's a great question, because I don't actually have a number. I should. But the industry is so vast and the supply side is so vast. Mm. On one hand, you get very, at first glance, you've got the natural connection, like here's a cork producer. Mm. These people sell bottles to wineries. Then you have another, you got the cooperage company. So you've got three verticals there all working on helping the product. But then you have something like weather systems, vineyard monitoring systems, which may be a larger conglomerate type company that's selling a particular type of instrument to a particular vertical market. And they're selling that same instrument to orchards. They're selling it across other industries. So helping them, they don't really have someone on their team that's specifically dedicated to helping helping like build their business within the vineyard management industry. They may have a sales team, but generally their marketing team is more it's more diverse. It's on a global scale. So what we can do there, you wouldn't necessarily think about, is that we can take just that one division or that one sort of instrument that they have and build out a landing page for them, build out something that would actually resonate with the type of wineries. Because a lot of times you go to some of these larger tech or larger instrument type companies and you just see pictures. You may see a picture of a vineyard, or you may see pictures of the tech instrument superimposed over the vineyard. But really, there's not really a whole lot there that helps a winery draw the connection that's the instrument for them. So we can work with the sales team and the marketing team to develop a page that actually makes sense. And those people are going to these series of trade shows coming up. And that a lot of times you see that the these big companies just, they put the link on there. They've invested a ton of money on the booth. They invested a ton of money on being in the brochure and the trade show guide, and they're dumping people off right on the homepage. Mm-hmm. So, you really should be dumping them off, not dumping them, but you should be sending them to a page that actually is built for the trade show, built for the winery, so that when they do get a lead, it makes sense. There's not a disconnect. You spend all this time talking on the floor, showing your passion, and then you send someone to a generic homepage. The story's broken from that point. Mm-hmm. So we can help even larger companies that may not be considered within the niche, become a niche player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's all about relevance, I think, isn't it? You know, mm-hmm. and continuity and mm-hmm. having that. But yeah, that sense of, as you say, if you kind of press the flesh and you've seen somebody in person, you don't really want to take a step back, do you? You want to mm-hmm. get the relationship moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was, you know, a lot of the B2B side was just boots on the ground, visiting where you had a sales force. Mm-hmm. And with COVID, the sales force couldn't visit the wineries. The sales force, it was back to phone calls and back to digital expressions. We're sending people to a page. And that's not going away. Now that the trade shows are opening up again, there's still a whole virtual component that needs to be maintained. You don't want to just go, okay, we're going to go back to full in-person trade shows, our boots on the ground sales force. They're going to take it all, because what happens? Heaven forbid there be another, the pandemic ramps up again and we go back to virtual. But you don't want to be caught again like we all were caught in 2020 in March with a lackluster kind of digital footprint.
Yeah, no, but super, super interesting. I mean, I will just share another thought, really, on mm-hmm. on trade shows. You know, mainly because it's something that I feel very passionate about. More specifically, on the wine side of things. You know, mm-hmm. I speak with a lot of producers in, you know, various countries, and I notice that there is a similarity. There is sort of common thread around needing to get the liquid into mm-hmm. into the glass, if you like, of mm-hmm. the influencer, and that may not necessarily be a, you know, an Instagram influencer. It might be the writer, or it might be the importer, or you know, or whoever, the sommelier. And my you know, my impression, rightly or wrongly, is that people over-index. And they essentially expect too much to happen when they've gotten that wine into that glass of that person, and mm-hmm. maybe the whole piece isn't joined up, you know. And it's like, okay, this is going to be the wine that I give to this individual. It's going to change their mm-hmm. life, but not realizing that there's another 150 producers in the same room who are all thinking the same thing. And I'm just mm-hmm. curious. Is that something that you've potentially come across as well in terms of, you know, people who are working on the supply side that think, look, my service, my widget, whatever it mm-hmm. might be, is so unique, and it is such the thing that's going to make the difference, that the trade show, that's going to be it. As soon as they get to my booth, I've got them.
You do see that exuberance. I mean, the first day of the show, there's so much enthusiasm, and you do see the connection. But the problem is that, just like you said, the person walks to the next booth and then the next booth. And once they're three booths down and they've had three more conversations, they kind of, the enthusiasm of what they saw, it may be a foil, it may be a foil producer. There may be 10 foil producers at the upcoming expo. And at the end of the day, they just remember foil. Or they remember that they remember the product, and unless the producer can tell a story or to form some sort of a bond between the person that they're talking to, or in some sort of memorable conversation, it's going to be very difficult for the rep to follow up with those individuals later on. So it's really kind of what my advice is, rather than telling your story, it's figuring out the story of the person that is standing on the other side of the booth that actually gave you the time to came up and actually started talking to you. Ask them what's their winery doing, what challenges are they facing. But beyond that, just ask them kind of their motivations for attending the show, and then give them something based on that.
Okay. And
it's not someone that's what you're struggling with. That's going to be a common, that everybody's going to ask that. No one really wants to say what they're struggling with, but it's, you got to kind of, you got to gauge on a person to person basis and not really have your script.
Got you. And when you say in terms of give them something, I mean, is what are you, what sort of front of mind in that sense? And again, perhaps via an example, you know, if you do potentially have one.
Give them some sort of piece of value, follow up with them. And it doesn't have to be that day. But if it's the age old thing of being in sales where you've got, you write on the back of the business card, one point, it could be you discuss the smoke damage or the fire damage and you reference an article like, oh, did you read that? And they say, nope. Find that article, send it to them. Say, remember when we talked at the trade show about smoke damage? This was the piece I was talking about. Then you now have a bond. They remember, they'll remember talking to you about that, and they'll be twice as surprised that you sent them an article that has nothing to do with your business, and that you've started to actually get, you're actually interested in that conversation, interested in what they, what was top of mind for them. And that's what I was saying, like, give a piece of value, give a, give something that matters to them, figure out what matters. And it might not be your foil wrapper that's on the counter, but ultimately they may be buying a foil wrapper. Figure out what it, what is actually causing, what's actually interesting to them, and then provide that piece of value. And go, and that goes just a little bit beyond the general sales.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's no, super, super interesting, because it's obviously you with the agency. You know, you came in talking about the you know, the online world and landing pages and you know, a smooth online experience, but as you say, that, it's managing the offline as much as anything now that that is back in play.
And that ties into the podcast. And the podcast, we don't make money from the podcast, but it's, I did say it was central. We make money from helping people build landing pages, for helping people with their SEO, for helping websites. And we know those people need that to tell their story. But by offering them a platform on the podcast, we can provide them the value by giving them micro content. Because they, we can take in that little little excerpt or micro content of their story, provide it to them, even unbranded, and they can use that in their sales materials. So they be, they've gotten some value from us that we did, where I'm not expecting anything from it, that then can lead down the road to help build out their story. Because they start to see that, and I think that's the way business should be done. You've got to provide value first before someone's going to like give you value.
Excellent. I love where this conversation is going, and you know, you've used one of my favorite words, really, micro content.
Oh yes.
So I'm like super interested. Again, you know, potentially via some examples to bring it to life, but maybe just sort of initially, you know, set the scene for what does micro content, or what has micro content looked like, and how has that evolved through the course of doing the podcast and getting together those 40 episodes?
Yeah, so we tend to dice up. We use so those little audiograms are really, they're great for driving people towards the podcast. And for those that don't know, there's an app called Headliner where you can get a little audiogram. And you've probably seen it on LinkedIn, or you've seen it on Facebook, where you've got an image of the person. You got the headshot of the person, and then you see the little the audio sound squiggles at the bottom, and then you see the text is transcribed. So a lot of times you're at work, you don't have the sound on, but you can see a few key pieces of information there that go, oh, okay, I'm interested. See, suddenly you've read two sentences, and then you click on the link, go back to the podcast. But that can also work well towards towards LinkedIn, where the company can send out that little piece of information that may be a 30-second snippet from the 1-hour show that gives their listeners or not listeners, but gives their potential consumers the a tidbit that can then be retargeted on Facebook to some of the visitors, that helps kind of slowly build the story. Most people aren't ready. If they're looking at a company, they're not ready for a 30-minute interview of the CEO. But if they start seeing little 10-second little audiograms or little 10-second snippets coming out, suddenly they've built an affinity with the company and with the CEO, one little piece of micro content at a time, which then leads and builds that kind of a bond between them and the company.
Amazing. It's what I call digital breadcrumbs.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I'm borrowing that from somebody, but it feels like one of the things that probably came up in the conversations I've had. And as you say, it's making that trail of digital breadcrumbs and I guess
I love the theory of that breadcrumb, bringing them back, dropping the little gingerbread all the way back to the house. But it's a little more than that, because it's more of the it's that when you don't become best friends with someone the first day you meet them. You may feel when you leave the bar after three beers, four beers, to be best friends with the person, but the next
share
day
a bottle of wine.
You don't have that bond. It's slowly over many years that you form that friendship. And micro content does more than just lead them to the end goal of listening to the podcast. It's each one of those helps forge that bond. And from one long form, it's very easy to form all those little interactions and chances.
Incredible. Yeah. We're totally in sync here because, I've come across a piece of research, which seems to be, quite consistent and they talk about, when you building those relationships, they've actually found out what it takes, and they've put a number on how long it takes to be a best friend and to become a
what is that? Trusted friend. I'm very curious.
So they call it the 7-11-4 number. So it should be 7 hours essentially spent together across 11 interactions in 4 locations. So
that makes sense.
That has been shown to be consistent for like friendship building. Exactly as you say, you might have 2 hours in the pub together, depending on how quick you drink. but yeah, what about if you then go meet up the next day and, go bowling you have all of these interactions together. You have all that time kind of in the bank, but then the interactions themselves also matter. 11 interactions. So it's like, not just together for one day for 7 hours, you'd probably have had enough of each other on the first day. Space it out a little bit, but then equally don't just be in one location. Don't just be in the bar. Be at the football match, or be at the park, or be running. I think when we again take a step back from our best friendships, we do see that they kind of have that multi layered dimension to them, and I think that's something that again has been studied, and they've shown that it can be quite effective if done with the best intentions as well. And I think absolutely providing value can be a way that you can get up to that 7 hours and that content that people want to.
Well, that's brilliant. And you've got in online, you've got the different platforms. You got Instagram, you got LinkedIn, you've got your 4 locations, and then eventually you can get your 7 hours.
That's it. Yeah. LinkedIn is the water cooler. YouTube is going to the movies. TikTok is the silent disco, and you've got all these different places where, in real life you'll act very differently. And I think it even ties back to that whole point that I'm sure you kind of tie into and comes up, which is it's not just about blasting the same message in the same way on those different channels. I think it's also being sensitive to the nature of the channel and what somebody might be expecting when they intentionally go to the water cooler or go to the movies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that water and LinkedIn itself has evolved a lot over the last especially over the last year. It's less about outreach now. It's more about, it's really become the Facebook of business, or the Meta. I guess it's Meta now, the Meta of business. But people are actually now consuming content on LinkedIn, whereas before it was all about connecting and all about kind of listing your resume. Whereas now there's pretty deep conversations going on there. So that I have liked how LinkedIn is evolved over the last year. Yeah, it was funny. It goes back about three and a half, 4 years. I had this, people can't see this, but I have this fancy mic on my desk. And I bought all the equipment about 3 years ago, tacked it to the desk, and I was like, I'm going to have a podcast. I just love reading them. You can go deep. And I kind of just knew that was a, I loved having the larger conversations and like being able to record it, but it was like figuring out to actually get started. Mm. And that was the hard part. It was more the impetus, and my wife did her best by making fun of me every time she walked past the desk saying, "Are you ever going to use that thing? You're looking really cool over there, Drew, but it's I just see a lot of dust on it." So finally she just resigned that I was never going to do it. And I bought some of those online courses, just figuring out, How do you start? It's so scary to record your first episode. And there's that course by Pat Flynn. So yeah. I went through it, but with every self-help course, life gets in the way and you tend to just never quite complete it. And since you never complete it, you never really started the podcast. Yeah. So I ended up getting hooked up with these guys called Jeremy Weiss, Dr. Jeremy Weiss and John Cork at, Corcoran at Rise 25. And they help you actually launch your podcast. And that was the best investment I really made this year, for sure. Mm. And that they took it through. They actually interviewed me for my first podcast. And I didn't even know they were going to start. Jeremy's just like, "We're recording." I'm like, "Oh, crap. Here we go." So I started my first episode. And he's like, "There you go. You got your first one done." And then we worked on recruiting a few people. I was the guest on my first podcast. But then suddenly the... got the first one out there. I said, "Oh, good. Oh, geez." So they just kind of actually just pushed me off the cliff. Basically, I paid them a lot of money to push me off the cliff. And once it started, then they had an outreach person that helped me work on kind of recruiting my first guests. And then once the ball started rolling, it never really stopped. But I needed that third party to just get me out there.
Absolutely love it. I would like to delve into that process, really, because I've been quite vocal, I think, really mm-hmm. saying, you know, I'm a person that is fairly new to wine, you know, and really have been doing my podcast for only around 4 years, but mm-hmm. haven't necessarily seen the growth in wineries and restaurants and hospitality mm-hmm. engaging with podcasts.
I would think they would love to. The other thing on podcasts, I don't know if you've watched it, but we're right way through the Only Murders in the Building, which with Martin Short and Steve Martin. They run a true crime podcast. It's on, at least in the United States, it's on Hulu. Okay. But that's pretty mainstream to have a whole TV series, which is excellent, by the way, just based around a podcast. That's how you know it's, you know, that when Joe Rogan had his, and there's actually, those are podcasts that are celebrities, mm-hmm. but to have an actual TV show mm-hmm. with celebrities and the podcast is the focus, that was a game changer this year for elevating podcasts to that mainstream. The other thing on podcasts is, like, back in the first days, it's like, what do you want your podcast about? Mm-hmm. And I had to make a choice, because most people are like, why would somebody want to listen to an industry focused podcast? You're not going to get that many viewers. Yeah. But really, it's not so much getting 90,000 people listening to my Legends Behind the Craft every week. It's getting the right couple hundred people that really have a passion for the industry, that really want to hear the stories behind some of these legends that are on the supply side. So it's more like the quality and that concentrated core audience. There's at least a couple hundred million different niche markets yeah. that those people will want to tune into. So I really see there's no reason why any vertical or any type of group couldn't have a podcast for their core listeners or core group.
Totally. Yeah. Amen. So, you know, how long did the process take with the guys from Rise 25 then? Could you maybe give us a sort of a drone view of that?
Yeah, it was a couple weeks. It was really actually pretty quick from the time I engaged them through a few kind of strategy sessions and helping the infrastructure. So they do it full Dumfries. So they help the cover art. They do the they help you with the voiceover at the beginning.
Yeah.
They help you with your kind of intro script and then the outreach. And from there on, we recorded, I think I recorded two per week for 3 weeks. And then we had six in the can, which allows you to get onto Apple Podcasts. You need iTunes is where you need to get it. But you need to have mm-hmm. five or so to get onto iTunes. Mm-hmm. And they helped with that. And then kind of after that month, then it's just, they help produce every week for us, which is, a tremendous help to be able to just record the podcast and send it off to their team to publicize online has been kind of huge for us, because our strong point isn't really actually uploading music or uploading, you know, audio files.
Yeah. And that has then continued as a relationship. So it was a kind of, they did, as you say, the strategy part, getting you confident, you know, getting you to get the dust off the mic and turn it on and you know, see it really as that is your channel, really, I think, and to kind of step into that as the channel to really reach out and bring that value.
Yeah, and if you're trying to do it yourself, you can add, I mean, most people do. Most businesses do just spin up their podcast themselves. But if you're busy, you know, sometimes it's helpful to engage a third party to do it.
Yeah, I know that there are many companies, certainly in the UK, that do engage in that as well. So, I'm sure that. And I hope that more people do step into that realm. You know, I think that perhaps when I was, you know, trying to kind of own the realm. But I think, I think you made a really interesting point earlier, you know, which is like, you know, you don't want to be listening to the same voice, you know, all the time. And it might be, you know, you want to branch out, and, you know, there's totally enough space for more people. And I want more, really, you know, actively want more wine podcasts out there. I want more people, and it's for me, it's genuinely not about competition. It's just, it's more fun, and people are looking for it. You know, the ears are out there, and we need to collectively, I think, make the content to reach those ears.
That's an excellent point. I love how you pointed out there. At first, you think, oh well, he's already doing it. Somebody's already talking about wine. I'm not going to do it. And that happened to me, like with Gary Vaynerchuk, with the wine show on YouTube. It's like suddenly he had so much success. It's like, ah, crap, I'm too late. He's already done it all. But really, you can only listen to Gary so much.
Yeah,
you really want to start listening to other people talking about wine. And with the podcast, the more diversity that you have, the more different type of wine podcasts out there, the broader the group goes, because every podcast isn't going to resonate with everybody. So it's awesome to have those choices. And then you can start a conversation amongst the podcast community. And then you can start kind of comparing one against the other. And what is Lawrence saying? What is Gary Vee saying about wine? And how, and then the wine, it tends to become a much richer platform.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as well, you know, I love listening to all types of podcasts, but I'll be honest, you know, and I actively avoid listening to other wine podcasts. not anything to do with quality, but I personally feel as though it's you know, I'm super interested to hear about that cross connection between the podcast and the TV show, and, you know, listen to, you know, creative podcasts and podcasts about business, and just to kind of, yeah, really, I think, understand some of the nuances of the platform, and because, you know, there are millions of shows now out there, so I think that's also useful just to try and you know, different flavors of podcasts that there certainly are out there.
And the podcasts are much like books in a bookstore. I mean, I tend to read nonfiction. I mean, I like business help books, I like marketing books, I like historical books, so I'm going to gravitate to those types of podcasts versus like the true crime or versus a fictional podcast, which my wife loves those. She goes deep into those type of podcasts. So it's in those, there can be a cross fertilization between those genres, which I haven't actually, I see the future being that, but I haven't actually seen it right yet. Everybody's pretty much in their lane. I talk to wine suppliers, but I don't really talk about, I would love to have like a fiction writer on talking about a fiction writer who understands the wine industry, what they could offer to it, what tips they have outside of this lane that I'm in right now.
Okay, very, really interesting. And it's going to get very meta, as it often does. Nothing to do with Facebook. But having me, because I believe that I was your most recent guest, the most recent episode that you posted on there. So, you know, I'm curious, you know, and I'd love to kind of, you know, be reminded as well, of, you know, if you wouldn't mind just, telling a little bit the story of how that came to be. And then I think also, you know, maybe what might have been interesting for you or different for you, because presumably that was the first time that you'd actually had a fellow podcaster on as a guest.
It was. Yeah. No, it was cool. So we met via Lori, Lori Milote from Outshinery. And I guess Lori and you were at the London
Wine Fair.
The London Wine Fair. And Lori came back and she's like, Drew, I got to connect you with Lawrence Francis. This guy, he's really doing some amazing things with podcasting in London, and he's helping uncover these winery stories, and he's helping kind of uncover the regions of the wineries. And that's exactly what, I mean, Lawrence, you're on the supply side. You're connecting, you're connecting people with wineries, which is a business to business. I mean, you're a business connecting, helping them promote their wines, which is something that's so valuable, because it's not exactly, I mean, you've made a business around it, which is not a little different than what a lot of podcasters do, where they're just in it for a passion. You are actively helping wineries promote themselves through this medium. And that was the first time I saw it and was super excited to uncover that conversation on the show. Because my goal was to show the wineries that are listening to our podcast that there is this platform and there is people like you that can help them. And you were just finished wrapping up that amazing series you did with the Washington State AVAs, which for them is golden. The content that came out of there was unbelievable. I mean, your series of podcasts became a book, or could become a book, on those AVAs and everything coming from first of hand interviews with those people.
Podcasts are, you know, obviously passions of ours, but I'm really curious to actually just put another idea out there, because, you know, occasionally I'll be asked around what's beyond podcasting. And, you know, I think that's kind of a natural way for the conversation to go, even though I'm still not sure that people are actually squeezing the juice out of the opportunity that's kind of here right now. And I don't know if I think we may have touched on this, but I developed something called really Winemaker Audible during the lockdown, which is all about bringing the voice of the producer to the consumer, to people who are trying to look at wine on a website. And rather than only having the visual there and having, you know, all the lovely descriptions and the bottle shots, they actually have an audio clip from the producer, which they can hit on. And then in a sort of 2 to 3 minute clip, they will hear the story of the wine from the producer, you know, told in their accent and told in their, unique way, talking about, production and, you know, really kind of giving you that sense of, I've got the producer here next to me talking about that. And I wonder if you've come across any other examples or similar examples of things where, you know, audio is kind of coming out there in a sort of a different platform other than on a podcast.
Well, with the whole augmented reality, you can see that with some of the wine labels, where if you hover your phone over to the 19 crimes, you can see the label start to move and talk. It's a little on the more commercial, cheesier side than what you're talking about. But I can also see what, like, Paul Salcido with Bottle Van, he does QR codes on the back of the wine labels, and helps in that. People scan that and it goes to a page of rich content where you can have those audio files. So I see a great connection between them, because people do want to learn more. They don't always want to read more. They want to watch stuff and they want to listen to stuff.
And where you were talking earlier again about the micro content, have you seen any of that actually making its way onto, you know, beyond the headline or even on the website, you know, where people can, you know, hear the voice of the brand through the website?
I would like to see a lot more of it. I'm not seeing enough of it right now. So we're at the early stages of that. that micro content very rarely makes it onto the website. It kind of gets lost in social very quickly, and then it goes below the fold and never gets uncovered. So we work hard trying to get that micro content or get positions on the site so that it can be used and can turn into more evergreen type content.
My view is that that's, again, something different, and it's speaking to white space. And I think, we're not only in sort of, yeah, wine mode, are we? You know, we have these other lives. And I think that, you know, if people are listening to different types of podcasts, you know, I think at an absolute minimum, you know, why not have a podcast tab on your own website? You know, it need not be necessarily the whole episode that's posted there, but I would imagine that could be quite a powerful way to, you know, bring those snippets and those breadcrumbs, put them front of the site, really.
That would be a great idea, and it ties into all the media appearances for the winery. Mm-hmm. But actually embed those, because podcasts are easily embeddable on sites across the board. And rather than being worried about having your own winery podcast, just get on people's podcasts and just list those episodes out. And it really helps kind of paint the picture of who you are. And really, for those avid wine fans, they're going to consume that content, and it's going to make your brand that much richer.
Yeah, that's. I'm sure it won't take long to get to your 7 hours of interaction if you follow that advice. Drew, I've so enjoyed our conversation. You know, I really feel as though we've got a real feel for your agency, how that works with the podcast, and I think we've got a sense of, you know, some of the value that you're kind of bringing to the people on the supply side. Looking forward. I'm really curious to know kind of what's next, really. I mean, you know, we've spoken a bit about, you know, the how well really podcasting is going, but you know, what's next in terms of your business development, and what do you kind of see over the horizon in 2022? And feel free to be a bit speculative. We know we won't necessarily help you do it.
Oh yeah, no. What's coming up for us? So we've been on the supply side and done a lot of great work there. But you know, I've always loved just selling wine and selling wine to consumers. So we're expanding out to our direct consumer sales side, helping wineries craft their e-commerce efforts and helping them just boost, basically sell more wine. So we're setting up a second podcast. It's going to be a raw and unfiltered podcast, with the target audience being people that are actually boots on the ground selling wine, where we talk raw and unfiltered sales strategies and just shop talk about war stories about selling wine and how to sell more of it and tips and tricks. So that's going to be the new one. It's going to be a little different of an angle, a little less of a legends behind the craft, uncovering the stories, and more just actionable sales talk over a glass of wine. It'll be done on Thursday afternoons, and the guests will be drinking wine. We'll be discussing the wine we're drinking. We'll be discussing sales. The only qualification is you can't drink the wine from your own winery. It has to be someone else.
Okay. And this is exciting, really, you know, because I don't believe you've recorded any episodes yet.
No, we haven't. We are in the process of recording them. We've got our first guest lined up, and we're going to start recording next week. So this might be out by the time you listen to it, or it might still be in production.
Let's see. And
keep an eye out.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. We'll link it up in the description. And yeah, just so that, you know, somebody who's listening might feel like they want to kind of put their hand up and appear, you know, give us, you know, maybe a sort of a sense of the sort of profile of a person that you're looking for to be a guest.
Oh, it would be a tasting room manager, somebody that's in charge of a direct consumer wine program at a winery. Could be a rep on a sales floor at a wine store. Really, the ideal guest is someone that knows something about selling wine, has some opinions on selling wine, and some war stories about what's worked and what hasn't worked on selling wine, and has the courage to come out and talk about it.
If you know someone who would enjoy this episode, please share the direct link, which is interpretingwine.com/458. And if you really enjoyed it, please leave the episode a review on the same link, which really helps people find Interpreting Wine. Do see below for the Barrels Ahead website, where you can find their main social media handles and all past episodes of Legends Behind the Craft podcast. And of course, I'd love to have you following along with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. Next time on the Interpreting Wine Wine Communication Series, in episode 459, I'll be speaking with Boris Lamont of the New Zealand Wine Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to Interpreting Wine to be alerted when it goes live. See you then.